Welcome back. If this is the group we have, it's a small group, but that's what Hashem wanted. Looking forward to learning together. Just some housekeeping. One brief housekeeping notification is that we usually meet every other week. So according to our current schedule, we will next meet at 2 p.m. on Monday, February 19th, which is 2 weeks from today. But I will be away. So we have to decide whether we want to... Let me just pause the recording for this because it's not really relevant. Our topic, we've been talking about the meaning of the word tefillah. That's what we've been talking about. The meaning of the word tefillah. What does the word tefillah mean? And so far, we've had two classes on this and we've explored two different interpretations. The first meaning, the first class we spoke about, tefillah means to make yourself think, to make yourself assess. And what that means is then davening is about making yourself think about the things that you want versus the things that you should want and whether we want what we're supposed to want. That's what we spoke about the first time. The second thing we spoke about last time, albeit in a sort of rushed fashion because I had to go to New York, is that tefillah means to connect. It means to connect with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and it also means to sort of connect with ourselves by repairing the holes that the world has left within our hearts. And so those were ideas that we explored in Shiurim number one and Shiur number one and Shiur number two, respectively. And so today we'll continue our explanation of the meaning of the word tefillah. And it's very hard to understate the significance of. Thank you very much. It's very hard to what?
Well, you left them over there.
The sources? Yeah. It's very hard to understate the significance of this undertaking because we bandy about the word tefillah like it's just another word. But I think that a lot of times people don't actually know what the word tefillah means. I think Judaism is filled with situations like that where people say things and we don't actually know what it means. We say the neshama should have an aliyah, something people say all the time. What does that mean, the neshama should have an aliyah? What does that mean? An aliyah from where to where? How often can a neshama get an aliyah? If so many people wish you a neshama has an aliyah, how high can it go? Okay, so the things happen all the time. All the time we say things that I think we're not fully aware of the meaning, and so we'll try to fix that a little bit today. Baruch atah Adonai Eloheinu Melech Haolam Shehakol Nihyeh Bidvaro. And so today, we'll continue our exploration of the meaning of the word tefillah. We'll revisit the story of Yaakov and Yosef that we looked at the first time we met. And I think we can learn something different when we look at it again. Maybe this will be a shorter shiur than normal, given just that it's not a very long discussion, but we'll see. Now, I realized when I first started preparing today's class that even though we set out to identify the meaning of the word tefillah, we never actually looked at the first time tefillah comes up in Tanakh. We sort of just went straight into, well, what does it mean? And we said... We never really said, well, where does tefillah, the idea, the word tefillah, where does that come from? So where does it come from? Does anybody know? Without looking at the source sheet, where the first time tefillah is mentioned in the Torah, the verb, lehit palel. So the first time it comes up is in Bereishis. Source number one in Bereishis, Perek Chaf, Pesukim, Beis through Zayin. There's a very storied story, so to speak, about Abraham's encounter with Avimelech. Famously, Abraham lies to Avimelech about his wife Sarah's relationship to him, fearing that if he did disclose to Avimelech that Sarah was his wife, they would kill him and they would take Sarah. And so he said, no, she's actually my sister. There's a famous, not so famous, but a funny story involving one of my Rosh Yeshiva at Yeshiva University, who got on the, had to take the subway somewhere. The one train is very close to Yeshiva University in Washington Heights. And he got on the train and he saw one of his Talmidim on the train and he was on a pagisha. He was on a date. The Talmud was on a date with this nice young woman, I'm sure. And he was embarrassed. He didn't want his Rebbe to see that he was on a date. And so he tried to hide his face. And the Rebbe saw him and waved. And then the boy comes over to the Rebbe, the Talmud, and says, Rebbe, I just want to let you know, she's my sister. She's my sister. And the Rebbe said, that's what Avraham said. In any case, Avraham lies to Avimelech about Sarah's identity, fearing that Avimelech is going to kill his wife. And Avimelech does take Sarah, but he doesn't kill Avraham, because after all, Avraham is not the husband in Avimelech's mind. And then he gets punished. Hashem punishes Avimelech, and he warns Avimelech, and he tells him that he's going to be punished. He says, she's married, you took her, now you are going to die. And Avimelech is terror stricken because he was not under the impression that she was married to anybody. And he says, Halohu Amar Li Achotihu. The husband said that she was his wife. How can you hold me responsible for that? So Akadosh Baruch Hu said to him, that's true. Gam Anochi Yadati Ki Batam Levavcha Asita Zot. He said that, I know that your heart was in the right place, that you didn't want to take somebody who was married away from her husband. And he says, Ve'ata Hashev et Eshet Ha'ish. Now please give back this married woman to her husband, to Sarah, to Avraham. Ki navihu, because Avraham is a prophet, vayit palel badcha vechiyeh, and he will daven for you that you should live, that you shouldn't die as a result of the sin that you committed. V'imein chamishiv da kimot hamut. And if you don't give her back, then surely you are going to die. In other words, Avraham, if Avimelech does right by Avraham, will daven for his safety, will daven for his life. And so we see from here, this is the first time in the Torah, it's not the first time someone talks to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but it's the first time in the Torah that the word Vayit Palel is used. And I realize this is not intrinsically connected to our discussion today as much as it is slightly, because we're talking about tefillah, but I figured that it's, if we're going to have an entire shiur every other Monday talking about tefillah, it behooves us to first, at least, just know, we should know when the first time tefillah appears in the Torah. That's the first time the word Vayit Palel appears in the Torah. Okay, now, yeah. Now we will we'll fast forward several generations to Yaakov and Yosef and Ephraim and Manasseh. Now, this story might seem familiar to those who were at our first shiur, where we introduced the topic of the meaning of the word tefillah. And to arrive at today's understanding of the word tefillah, the one that we're going to explore today, we need to revisit this story of Yaakov and Yosef. Now remember that Yaakov, at this point in his life, is growing old. He's growing blind. He's not going to live for much longer, he realizes. And he, Ve'ene Yisrael kabdu mizoken, source number two, Lo yuchal lirot v'yigash otam ila v'yishak lehem v'yichadek lehem. Yaakov's eyes were dim with age, he couldn't see, so Yosef brought his children, Yaakov's grandchildren, to him. He gave them hugs and kisses. Vayomer Yisrael Yosef, and he said to Yosef, Ra'o fanecha lo pilalti. I never pilalti. Here it says expected, but we spoke about what pilalti really means. It means to think or to make yourself think. And God has even let me see your children. In other words, I never pilalti that I would see your face. And we spoke about how tefillah is really, this makes sense for those who were here last time. You remember that tefillah is really the reflexive conjugation of the word pelila. And it means, if pelila means to think or to reflect, then tefillah means to make yourself think or to make yourself reflect. That's what we spoke about the first time. But that's the pasuk. That's the time that palel appears. And Rashi writes that, we looked at it last time, this was the first explanation of tefillah, that lo mili'ani libi machshov machshava. I never would have filled my heart to think. Pelila means to allow yourself to think, as we've spoken about. And just to reiterate, remember, this is what we spoke about the first time, that tefillah means to make yourself think. Tefillah is the tav is reflexive, it means to cause yourself to think. And what we do during tefillah is we make ourselves think. What do we think about? So that's what the Shemona Esrei is for. 18 blessings that we're supposed to daven for. And when we read them, we have to ask ourselves, well, I'm supposed to want this. Do I really want this? Do I really want Yerushalayim to be rebuilt? How badly do I want that? Versus how badly am I supposed to want that? Okay. to peace is the last bracha. Do I really want peace in the world? Some people are really war hawks. They live for war. Maybe you're in the arms business. Do we really want peace? So those are the things that we have to reckon with when we daven. We have to ask ourselves if what we're supposed to want is what we actually want. Shemona Esrei is a list of things that we're supposed to want. And tefillah is when we make ourselves think about all those things. Okay, that's what we spoke about the first time. Does that make sense? Okay, good. So the truth is that that is Rashi's explanation of the word pelila. But there is another explanation of the word pelila. And before we explore it, we need to first look at a Mishnah. It's a Mishnah that at first glance seems like it has nothing to do with what we're talking about, but actually proves extremely relevant. It's the last Mishnah in Maseches Brachos. Perek Tet Mishnah Aleph, which is kind of a misnomer because there is only one Mishnah in Perek Tet of Brachos. It's a long Mishnah. This is just part of it that we're about to read. And it comes to us in source number 4. And it expresses a very famous and a principle that has engendered a lot of discussion, which is the following Mishnah. Source number 4 on the bottom of the page. Hatzoeg l'sha'avar harezo tefilat shav. Anybody who cries out over the past, meaning in an attempt to change that which has already taken place, it's in the past, it's already happened, harezo tefilat shav. That is considered a prayer that's in vain. The prayer is not going to be effective for something that's too late. It's already, you know, a teacher of mine once said, the scariest three words that you can hear are, it's too late. It's too late. So davening for something that already took place, try and change something that already took place, it's too late. Tefillah doesn't work. Tefillah doesn't work for that. Ketzad, that how so? So the Mishnah gives examples. Ha'ita ishto mi'uberes va'amar. If a woman is pregnant and her husband said, Yihiratzon she'telid ishti zachar, may it be HaKadosh Baruch Hu's will that my wife give birth to a boy. Harezo tefilat shav. That is a tefilat shav because at the point of his tefillah, the baby's sex was already determined. So there's no need to daven, and a davening for the baby's sex to be a boy or a girl, that's not going to matter because it was already determined. The Gemara says you can daven for to have a boy or a girl within the first 40 days, the Gemara says, but after that the sex is considered determined and you're not allowed to do it anymore. Nowadays, modern science tells us that that sex is determined at conception. Okay, that's a discussion for another time. And the Mishnah continues, Hayita baba derech v'shama kol tzvacha ba'ir. That if somebody is going on the way, if somebody is walking, and they hear from the neighboring village, they hear a scream. Oh no. And they say, V'amar yihiratzon shaloyu elu b'nei viti. Please, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, may it be that the people who are screaming and presumably being attacked, it's not my house. It's not my householder. It's not my family that's being attacked. Again, harezo tefilat shav. Why is that a tefilat shav? Because it already happened. When you hear the scream, it's already too late. You can't daven for HaKadosh Baruch Hu to not have these people attack your home if they've already attacked it. So you can't daven for something that is not within the laws of nature, essentially is what we're saying here. Tefillah, we believe, works wonders, but we do not daven for things that are impossible. Or that nothing is really impossible because God can do whatever He wants, but we don't daven for things that require a miracle. It would require a miracle to have the baby's sex changed arbitrarily after it had already been established. It would take a miracle to have your family reverse time so that they not end up having been attacked. So we don't actually daven for things that are outside the realm of nature. And that is our Mishnah. Now what does this have to do with tefillah? What does this have to do with the meaning of the word tefillah? Any thoughts? So, the truth is, the Mishnah that we just read is actually extremely relevant to a definition of the word tefillah. And by the way, this Mishnah, there's a big machlokas when the Mishnah says Hatzoik l'sha'avar harezet tefilat shav, that if someone davens about something that already happened, this is considered to be a vain prayer. Does that mean that the tefillah just doesn't work? Meaning you might as well not daven because it's not going to make a difference? Or does it mean that it's actually usher, that you're not allowed to daven for something that's impossible? Because let's say, because maybe you can say, okay, I'm going to daven anyway. So that's a question. Does it mean it's just not going to work and you're just wasting your time? Or is it actually usr? Moshe Feinstein in a tshuva says, no, it's actually usr. You're not allowed, even though it says tefillat shav, it doesn't say that it's usr. Rav Moshe says, no, it's actually usr. The Birkas Avraham in his commentary on Shash is not sure about this. He says, maybe it would actually just be that it doesn't work, but it would be permitted to do if you wanted to. Okay. In any case, essentially, tefillat shav is usr at worst, and at best, it's ineffective. It's ineffective. And we see from here that we really only need to daven for things that are within, we really only can daven for things that are within the laws of nature to happen. All of this is by way of introducing a midrash. The midrash is a very interesting midrash, and the midrash is in the Psikta Zutrata. The Psikta Zutrata is a late midrash. It was written in the 11th or 12th century. It's also called the Midrash Lekach Tov, which is the more famous name of the midrash. And the midrash in source number 5 on the second page writes that on this pasuk of Yaakov saying I never would have pilalti that I would see your face ra'o panecha lo pilalti, that the midrash writes kilomar, what does this mean ra'o panecha lo pilalti, that I never hoped I would see your face? It means lo ha'iti mitpalel lirot panecha, I never davened that I would see your face. Meaning, what does plila mean? Lo ra'iti. Lo hayiti mitpalel lirot panecha. Pelila comes from the word tefila. We said the opposite when we first spoke. We said that tefila comes from the word pelila. No, so he's saying, faker. Pelila comes from the word tefila. When he says, ra'o panecha lo pilalti, when I said I never would have pilalti that I would see your face, it literally means that Yaakov never davened to HaKadosh Baruch Hu that he would see Yosef's face again. Why? Why didn't Yaakov daven to HaKadosh Baruch Hu that he would see Yosef's face again? So the Midrash Lekach Tov, again in Parshas Vayechi, Perek Memches, continues, Lefi Shenitya Ashti Mimcha. Yaakov says, because I despaired of ever having seen you again. Fa'amarti Tarof Taraf Yosef, I thought you had been torn to bits by a wild animal. We know the story when the brothers come back with the blood-stained cloak. Yaakov thinks that Yosef was torn to pieces. Because people only daven for things that are within the realm of possibility. Ribono shel olam, zachini lirota. Regarding those things we say, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, please help me merit to see it. If Yaakov thought Yosef was alive, he would have davened, let me see him. But he was so convinced. And there are mafarshim who disagree with this. But the Midrash Lekach Tov says that he was so convinced that Yaakov had passed away, that Yaakov had been killed, that Yosef had been killed, excuse me, that he never really even bothered to daven. He thought it was a lost cause. Essentially, we say, and the Midrash is saying here, that instead of tefillah coming from the word pelila, pelila actually comes from the word tefillah. And when the Torah says that Yaakov never pilalti that he would see Yosef, it doesn't mean he never thought like Rashi. It means he never, even though it might be true, it means he never davened. He never davened that he would ever see Yosef. He was never mitpalel that he would never see Yosef again. And he explains the reason why is because it was already said and done. At least in Yaakov's mind, it was already a done deal. Yosef had been killed, and there was nothing to daven for. And the idea here is that Yaakov is telling Yosef, I never davened to Hashem to see you, because I thought that you were long gone. Tefillah only works if there's something possible, as we read in that Midrash, as we read in the Mishnah. But we don't daven for impossibilities. And since I thought that you were dead, davening for you is now an impossibility. And as the Mishnah in Brachot said, we don't daven for things that are reasonable impossibilities. Again, it can be a slim possibility. That's fine to daven for. But it can't be so slim that it would require a miracle. And if you think that someone's dead, then bringing them back to life does require a miracle. Radak, the Radak, Rav David Kimchi, the commentary on the famous Bible commentator, writes even more clearly in his commentary on this pasuk in source number 6. V'yesh mefarshim pilalti inyan tefila. He quotes the Midrash Lekachtov, that some explain that pilalti comes from the word tefila. Ki the tefila tshav ha'iti. And he says it explicitly, that Yaakov thought that davening for Yosef would have been a tefila tshav. It would have been a prayer that was uttered in vain. Because I really thought that Yosef, you had already died. Now, we see from here a number of things, I think. Number one, first of all, we see from here that Yaakov thought that Yosef was dead. Okay. Number two, we see from here that this is the reason why Yaakov did not daven for Yosef. He thought he was dead. And number three, putting this all together, that's what Yaakov means when he says, Ro'o panecha lo pilalti, that I never thought that I would see your face. It means I never davened because I thought that it was a done deal and you're not allowed to daven at tefilat shav. That's not going to work. Maybe according to Rav Moshe, it's even usher. And we know that according to many opinions, Yaakov Avinu kept the Torah. So he didn't want to daven at tefilat shav. He didn't want to daven at tefilat shav. He thought it was already done. He thought that Yosef had been killed. Now again, we're talking about, just to bring things back to the present and what we're doing in this room, we're trying to define the word tefillah. Now, neither of these authorities, neither the Radak nor the Midrash Lekachtov, actually define tefillah. What do they define? Plilah. They define plilah, the word that's actually used in the Torah. But plilah, they define as it means to pray. And I think we see from their comments and from this Midrash in Mishnah in Brachos that prayer requires something that many have called the rarest of currencies. What does prayer require? What is the rarest of currencies? Hope. Hope. Prayer requires hope. You need hope in order to daven. In fact, davening about situations in which there is no hope is not even considered a valid tefillah at all. Tefillah requires hope. Yaakov didn't daven because he thought that there was no hope. The Midrash says that when something is so far gone, there's no hope, you're not even allowed. The Mishnah, excuse me. According to Rav Moshe, you're not even allowed. You're not even allowed to daven. And not only does tefillah require hope, but if tefillah and hope are so inextricably intertwined, then plilah does not only mean to daven, it also means to hope. This point is made explicitly by a certain Rabbi Menachem Yaakovson. Rabbi Menachem Yaakovson is an Israeli rabbi who wrote in the following article in source number 7. B'pasuk b'parshas Vayechi ro'os panecha lo pilalti. When Yaakov says to Yosef, I never pilalti that I would see your face. Hamashma'ut shel hamila pilalti hu b'muvan shel tzipia v'tikva. The meaning of the word pilalti means is a sense of anticipation, v'tikva, and a sense of hope. Lo tzipiti v'lo kiviti she'od ere otcha. I never anticipated, I never hoped that I would still see you, that I would ever see you again. And we see from here that tefila benuya al tzipia v'tikva. Tefila is built on hope. Tefila is built on anticipation. When Yaakov says, ro'o panecha lo pilalti, what does he mean? He means that I never hoped that I would see your face. And if tefillah comes from the lashon of plilah, then what does tefillah mean? It means to hope, or really to make tefillahs reflexive. It means to make yourself hope, to inspire within yourself, to instill within yourself a sense of hope. And he concludes with a beautiful message. He says to anybody who feels right now, l'chol mi shemargish achshav, eitz tzara, that they're in a difficult time, tefillah is an opportunity to create a dependency upon our Father in heaven, to turn to HaKadosh Baruch Hu with our worries and our pain, for God can and desires to assist each and every one of us. In short, plilah comes from the word tefillah. We said in the first class that tefillah comes from the word plilah. Here we're saying plilah comes from the word tefillah. And tefillah we see is connected with hope. Tefillah is only valid when there is hope. And therefore, he writes, Rabbi Yaakovson writes, Hamashmut shel mila pilalti b'movin shel tzipia v'tikva. Plila means to hope. In other words, if plila comes from tefillah, And tefillah is so inextricably intertwined with hope, then plila itself means to hope, which means that if plila means to hope, then tefillah, which is the reflexive version of the word plila, means to make yourself hope, to inspire within yourself the sense of opportunity, the sense of possibility that I think so often goes extinguished. And I like this answer because I think it fits in very well with the pshat of the verses. When the Torah says, Ra'o panecha lo pilalti, if we were reading that phrase without any of the things we spoke about, I would think that we would interpret pilalti as the hope. Yaakov is, on a pshat level, seems to be saying, I never hoped to see you again, meaning I thought I couldn't. That seems what he's saying. I think that just makes sense with the pshat. If you think about what Yaakov must be saying at this moment, he's saying that I never would have hoped to see you again. So it makes a lot of sense to say that pelila means hope, and therefore that tefila also has to mean hope. And I think what emerges from this is that when we daven, what we're essentially doing is we're telling ourselves, I still hope. Because otherwise there's no need to daven. We're telling ourselves that I still hope. We're telling ourselves that whatever it is that I'm here in front of a Kadosh Baruch Hu asking for, I still believe that there's a possibility that it can happen. In fact, if there really is no possibility, can't daven for it. Doesn't work. Now, I think this helps us arrive at our third understanding, and maybe this will be our last, our third understanding of the word tefillah, which means tefillah, lehit palel, means to make yourself hope, to cause yourself, to inspire within yourself a sense of hope. To daven is to hope. To pray is to express our faith in the ability for things to still get better. And to talk to Hashem is to renew within ourselves a healthy dose of hope. L'maisa, when we approach God in prayer, we're making a statement that all is not lost. In fact, that's the only reason I'm bothering to approach you, God, in the first place. When we daven, we are daring to hope. And I think that's a beautiful subtitle for the word tefillah. Tefillah, daring to hope. And in closing, I just want to share a powerful story of just how powerful hope can be. Comes to you, courtesy of Rabbi Yechiel Sparrow, Touched by a Light, in his book on pages 94 and 95. Source number 8. On December 7th, 1988, a devastating earthquake destroyed much of the northwestern section of Armenia. Over 25,000 people lost their lives. It's dizzying. Tens of thousands more than on 9/11. 25,000 people lost their lives. Parents ran frantically to try to find their children who were buried under piles of rubble. In one small town, a father ran to his child's school, but when he arrived, he saw the school was no longer standing. The entire building was one big pile of stones and debris. Other parents came to the site and hung their heads and cried. They were certain that their children were no longer alive. But this one loving father had frequently reassured his child that he would always be there for him. And he was not going to allow this tragedy to be an exception to the promise. And so what did this father do? He began to dig. Bystanders who had gathered wondered aloud how long the desperate father would continue. Realists tried to convince him that he was wasting his time and that his efforts would prove futile. But he paid no attention to anyone. Instead, he called out to his son over and over again. Armand, don't give up hope. I'm coming to get you. Armand, I love you. Don't give up hope. He repeated this refrain over and over as the crowd looked on with a mixture of pity and admiration at the father's heroic and courageous and perhaps foolhardy efforts. He removed stone after stone, block after block, and worked diligently. Although others began to help, they quickly gave up. But this father displayed an unusual dedication and endurance. 12 hours passed, but he didn't tire. He continued to haul away piece after piece. After 24 hours, there were still no signs, no sounds, and no signs of life. But a father is a father, and he never gives up on his child. So the father continued to dig. Then, in the 38th hour, he began to hear a voice. It was his son, Armand. Papa, Papa! Armand continued to call as his father, exhausted and drained, worked more feverishly than ever. Word began to spread and hundreds gathered. Those individuals who had looked on with pity and had thought that this father had lost his mind now began to join him, while strangers clapped and cheered. A short while later, he removed one final stone. He reached out and grabbed his son's hand and cried uncontrollably. Father and son were reunited, and 13 other children's lives were spared. They were saved because a slab of cement had collapsed above them, creating a small cavity, preventing the rubble from crushing them. The story was written up the world over, and Armand's father became quite a sensation. He had taught the world a lesson in parenting. When asked if he ever gave up hope, little Armand replied, "No, I never did. My father told me that he would never give up hope on me, and I told all the other children that my father will come and find me, no matter how long it will take." When we dive into HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we're daring to hope. We're making a statement, or really, if tefillah is the reflexive form of the verb plila, then it means that we're causing ourselves to feel a sense of hope. We live in a time where we need a lot of hope. The world is a cruel and an unforgiving place, especially with what's going on now in Israel. And may it be in the merit of our learning this Torah together that we're able to see the things that we hope for. May we be able to be mechazik each other during this difficult time. And ultimately, may tefillah be for us not just an exercise in hope, but a productive exercise in hope that allows us to actually acquire, attain, and see the things that we want so badly, that I think all of us at this point are aching so badly to see in the world. Thank you for coming.